Hello and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the February 24th issue of People Magazine and the January edition of Women's Health. Some of the articles I will be sharing with you today include Prince Harry, Family, Love, and His Invictus Triumph, The Impossibility of a PCOS Diagnosis, and This Is Your Brain on Menopause. Prince Harry, Family, Love, and His Invictus Triumph. The Duke of Sussex reflects on a decade of the Invictus Games and celebrating the life-changing power of sport with Meghan by his side. By Janine Henney. This is a People Magazine exclusive. Prince Harry is beaming as he takes in the energy of the Invictus Games Vancouver Whistler 2025, the latest chapter of the International Adaptive Sports Tournament he founded in 2014 to support wounded, injured, and sick service members and veterans. Speaking exclusively to People in Vancouver on February 9th, he shares his excitement. It's incredible to be back in Canada. The Duke of Sussex, 40, has reason to feel at home. This is the first country to host the Invictus Games twice, following Toronto in 2017, where he and Meghan, Duchess of Sussex, made their first public appearance as a couple. It's also where they briefly lived after stepping back from their royal roles in 2020. Now, 7 years later, Meghan, 43, is once again beside him, offering unwavering support for the cause that means so much to him. To have my wife here supporting me is amazing. I love that she's by my side, he says. It's such an important piece to this whole adventure. Throughout the games, their connection was evident. From Meghan resting her head on Harry's shoulder to stealing kisses in the stands. It is full of positivity, a friend of the couple says. Harry is walking around with a big smile on his face, and he can't go very far without being stopped every few seconds. But that's what it's all about. Competitors echo that sentiment. He came up, gave me a hug, got a cheeky selfie. We were both in Afghanistan in 2008, so we had that connection there, says Christopher Bride of Team US. It's like you met someone down at the pub. He's a really cool guy. Jenna Provius of Team Canada describes Harry as very intense and purposeful. When he shakes your hand, he looks into your face like he wants to imprint your face in his mind. You can feel he's an outstanding leader. I feel like he's our hero. Harry, a former captain in the British Army, is already looking ahead to the next tournament in Birmingham, England, in 2027. It's amazing how after 10 years, we're still doing this, he says. We will continue the games for as long as it's needed. I wish that we could close this down because there wasn't a need for it, but as long as there's a need for it, we will keep it going. The couple will return home to Montecito, California, ready to share the experience with their children, Prince Archie, 5, and Princess Lilibet, 3. They are fascinated, Harry says. It's a very interesting conversation to have with your kids, to explain why that person is missing a leg, why that person is missing an arm, why do they look the way they do. It's challenging but important. With each games, Harry hopes to inspire not only the competitors, but also the next generation. Our kids are still so young, but Archie especially is asking those questions, he says. I'm constantly trying to make sure that I get it right in explaining what's happened to the competitors and what we do at Invictus to try to make their lives better and give them a chance to redefine themselves. And the power of sport. I'm hoping that my kids will take on every sport they want as well, because I think it's really important for all of us. With additional reporting by Simon Perry, you've been listening to Prince Harry, Family, Love, and His Invictus Triumph. The impossibility of getting a PCOS diagnosis. This metabolic condition is common, so why do so many women have to beg for answers? By Amy Martirana Winderl. Illustrations by Franziska Barsik. This is from Women's Health magazine. Soon after graduating from college in 2012, Molly Moran started losing her hair. It fell out in clumps every time she showered. I Googled it and read that it's normal, apparently, to lose some hair in your 20s. But it was alarming how much was coming out, Moran, now 35, says. It was really upsetting to me, and it was kind of scary. I was like, what is happening? At the time, she didn't make the connection between her hair loss and the fact that she had recently gone off the birth control pill for the first time in 5 years. Instead, she went searching for answers. After bouncing around from a primary care doc to a dermatologist to a gynecologist, none of whom ordered any blood work or tests, Moran was frustrated. I felt stuck because I saw all these doctors and didn't know what else to do, she says. Eventually, she went to a holistic nutritionist who ordered multiple blood tests to check for various things like nutrient levels and hormones. She suggested that Moran might have polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS, a condition likely caused by an imbalance of reproductive hormones. The nutritionist told her to see an endocrinologist for an official diagnosis. But Moran needed a doctor referral to do this, and the appointments wouldn't be covered by her insurance. So instead, she switched to the low-carb, high-protein diet the nutritionist recommended and began exercising more regularly. While there is no single diet that's best for PCOS, some doctors suggest cutting back on carbs, though not restricting calories, to see if it helps improve symptoms. In fact, a recent research review in the Journal of the Endocrine Society found that a ketogenic diet, high in fat, low in carbs, may help improve hormonal imbalances related to PCOS, assist with weight loss, improve fertility, and normalize menstrual cycles. In general, experts recommend focusing on reducing inflammation, eating a nutrient-rich diet, and balancing blood sugar. Changing her diet and exercising helped Moran shed weight in a way I never had before in my life, she says. And while her hair didn't grow back immediately, it did stop falling out. With her main concern resolved, she went about her life and never bothered to see an endocrinologist for an official diagnosis. For the most part, her symptoms didn't interrupt her day-to-day life. But more than a decade later, after experiencing secondary infertility, difficulty conceiving after getting pregnant and giving birth at least once before, Moran finally received a diagnosis from a reproductive endocrinologist that explained not only her trouble getting pregnant, but the hair loss and her weight gain, PCOS. As with many women, the estrogen on Moran's birth control was likely masking her PCOS symptoms, which was why they started up with a vengeance when she quit the pill. The ABCs of PCOS. In people with PCOS, the ovaries produce too many androgens, which are male sex hormones, like testosterone, that women naturally produce in addition to female hormones, like estrogen. This hormonal imbalance can affect normal egg production and ovulation, the process of releasing a mature egg from a follicle in the ovary. Sometimes women with PCOS can have multiple underdeveloped follicles on their ovaries, which continue to grow and fill with fluid, forming a cyst, instead of releasing an egg. Doctors may find excess follicles as well as overabundant sex hormones present at diagnosis. Other times, only one of these markers is present. It is not clear what causes PCOS, but experts believe that multiple factors, including genetics and environment, contribute to it. There also appears to be a significant link between insulin resistance and PCOS. Research suggests anywhere from 65 to 95% of people with PCOS also have insulin resistance, leading some experts to believe that insulin and the way it affects androgen levels may play a key role. In the United States, approximately 5 million to 6 million women, or 7 to 10% of women of childbearing age, have PCOS, according to the Endocrine Society. It can cause a host of symptoms, including acne, excess facial and body hair, hair loss, weight gain, depression, and anxiety. PCOS is also the most common cause of infertility and can start anytime after puberty. However, most women actually find out they have PCOS only in their 20s and 30s, when they have trouble getting pregnant and go to see a doctor about it, per the Office on Women's Health. One-third or more of women with PCOS said it took over 2 years and consultations with three or more health professionals in order to receive a diagnosis, per research conducted on PCOS support groups around the world and published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. The majority of these women said they were unsatisfied with their diagnosis experience or the info they received. Heather Huddleton, MD, a reproductive endocrinologist and the director of the UCSF PCOS Clinic and Research Program, says that this is a common feeling among patients before they come into her clinic. The experience women describe is that they are often met with confusion or brushed off by medical professionals, Dr. Huddleston says. Even if they are given a diagnosis, they are not given much of an explanation about it. The thing is, experts don't really understand a lot about PCOS, including what causes the ovaries to overproduce androgens in the first place. We still don't have a clear understanding of the cause, says Pardis Hosenzada, MD, an OBGYN and reproductive endocrinologist at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Symptom scramble. Further complicating the matter is the fact that there's no specific test for PCOS. the Rotterdam criteria, guidelines used to identify PCOS, are currently the most widely used and accepted tool doctors use to make a formal diagnosis. To be diagnosed, you should have at least two of the three main symptoms, says Margot Hudson, MD, an assistant professor in the Division of Endocrinology, Hypertension, and Diabetes at Brigham and Women's Hospital. These symptoms include irregular ovulation, high androgen levels, or symptoms of high androgen levels, such as excessive facial hair growth, and an excessive number of follicles on the ovaries as determined by transvaginal ultrasound. FYI, while weight gain and infertility are also common PCOS symptoms, they don't actually make the cut as diagnostic criteria. PCOS is also considered a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning clinicians first have to rule out other possible explanations for your symptoms, such as thyroid disorders, adrenal gland disorders, elevated prolactin, and ovarian cysts. Plus, some women who have polycystic ovaries but no other symptoms might not actually have metabolic syndrome. And the reality is that not every person with PCOS has the same exact symptoms, says Dr. Hassanizada. For some, symptoms are barely noticeable. For others, they're life-disrupting. This variability can make it challenging to recognize or diagnose, especially if not all symptoms are present at the same time, or if they are attributed to other causes. Plus, the way doctors measure and interpret PCOS symptoms differs greatly. For example, there is a defined scale for assessing abnormal hair growth, but not all clinicians consider hair loss and acne to be clear symptoms of high androgen levels, Dr. Hudson says. There's also some controversy about which androgens to measure. Some clinicians look only at free testosterone, while some also measure dehydroepiandrosterone sulfate, DHEAS, and/or androstenedione. Some symptoms, such as an irregular menstrual cycle or acne, are often dismissed as normal variations, Dr. Hosenzada says. The same goes for hair loss and weight gain, which are often brushed off, as Moran knows all too well. Additionally, weight stigma plays a role in how PCOS symptoms are perceived. Dr. Hosenzada says, yes, even in 2025, some providers may be quick to blame a person's weight for their symptoms, since being overweight or obese can impact hormone levels and contribute to irregular menstrual cycles and infertility. At the same time, a doctor might overlook the symptoms of a lean PCOS patient who has a normal BMI simply because the patient doesn't fit into the medical world's preconceived image of what someone with PCOS looks like. But the reality is that PCOS causes both irregular cycles and metabolic issues, which sometimes leads to weight gain and other times do not. Care complex. Many women with PCOS, especially those outside of major metropolitan areas, don't have healthcare pros who are well-versed in the syndrome on speed dial, further delaying diagnosis and treatment. Ultimately, A diagnosis requires an expert who is knowledgeable about the different ways the condition can present and who can consider all symptoms while ruling out other potential causes. While some OBGYNs are knowledgeable about PCOS, an endocrinologist or reproductive endocrinologist is usually best equipped to recognize and diagnose it. But reproductive endocrinologists are in short supply, and it's unlikely you'll get an appointment unless you're trying to conceive. So women end up bouncing between specialists, say a derm for acne or hair loss, and an OBGYN for irregular periods, who don't see the full picture. There is certainly a lack of awareness of how to put all of this together, Dr. Hudson says. Natalie Nurchi, 35, describes her PCOS diagnosis at age 17 as a quick, haphazard encounter that left her with no information about how the condition could affect her later on. My OBGYN at the time basically said, "You have something called PCOS, which means you have cysts on your ovaries and higher levels of male hormones, and you may have trouble getting pregnant. We're going to put you on birth control." So Nurchi went on the pill and didn't think about PCOS again until about 4 years later, when she inexplicably started gaining weight. At the time, she was a cheerleader for the Buffalo Bills. She describes being hyper aware of her body and the new weight. "I hadn't changed anything I was doing. I was still working out and dancing for hours every day. At first, I didn't even think about PCOS," Nurchi says. But when she started researching her symptoms, unexplained weight gain, depression and anxiety, trouble sleeping, she realized they could be signs of unmanaged PCOS. So she went looking for answers. "I started going to doctors. I saw 2 or 3 primary care physicians, and I had horrible experiences," Nurchi says. One told her she had anxiety because she was going through a transitional phase in life. Another said the weight gain was because she was getting older. She was left with a lot of medical anxiety. "I would leave doctor's appointments and just cry because no one took me seriously," Nurchi says. Even after she mentioned her past PCOS diagnosis, no one seemed to care, she says. They'd be like, "That's fine, but you're a female, and this is what happens." No expert put the puzzle pieces together. After essentially being told there was nothing she could do about her symptoms, Nurchi gave up. A few years later, when she was ready to start a family, she finally saw a reproductive endocrinologist who diagnosed her and helped get her on a treatment plan to improve her chances of conceiving and control her symptoms. The post-diagnosis validation Nurchi and Moran felt doesn't erase the years of unexplained symptoms or doctor interactions that left them questioning their intuition about their own bodies. What progress looks like. There are some bright spots in the PCOS landscape, though. Tremendous progress has been made in diagnosis and treatment in recent years, Dr. Hosenzada says. From better diagnostic criteria to advances in ultrasound technology, which helps doctors see PCOS on scans, and research that flags specific genetic factors involved in PCOS, fresh discoveries are paving the way for more targeted plans. New treatments are also being actively researched, including a malaria drug that shows promise for reducing testosterone and regulating menstrual cycles, and semaglutide, also known as Ozempic, which may help reduce symptoms by improving insulin sensitivity and aiding in weight loss. Nurchi says Ozempic has been life-changing for her, helping her lose weight and get her symptoms under control. But if we want faster diagnoses and better treatments, there's a lot of work to be done. Simply educating more healthcare providers, policymakers, and the general public about PCOS and the different ways it presents can make a huge difference. And physicians need to work on squashing stigma by not assuming symptoms are the result of weight. We need to check our biases to make sure we have equitable care, says Dr. Hazanzada. Women also need better access to specialized care, but increasing the number of providers and PCOS clinics, which employ a multitude of specialists, is easier said than done. Right now, it's difficult to find such a clinic outside of a large hospital. Looking back on her early 20s, Nurchi is sad that she struggled so much. Her advice? Keep advocating for yourself and don't give up. You have no obligation to continue with a doctor who isn't doing right by you. Keep pushing. It's so worth it when you get to the other side. 5 to 6 million. That's approximately how many women in the U.S. have PCOS. Source, Endocrine Society. This has been the impossibility of getting a PCOS diagnosis from Women's Health Magazine. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. This is your brain on menopause. Jessica Shepherd, MD, a women's health advisor, explains how your mind shifts during this body-altering phase in this excerpt from her book, Generation M, Living Well in Perimenopause and Menopause, from Women's Health. An accountant I know who deals with balance sheets all day suddenly couldn't remember the word revenue. A detail-oriented marketing executive has to read every memo 3 times instead of once. Another friend forgets the storyline of a television show within a day. None of these women are losing their minds, even though it can feel that way. What they are losing is estrogen, which affects the brain wiring responsible for memory and how fast you process information. Combine that with a lack of sleep common in menopause, and you have the perfect recipe for brain fog. Estrogen is to the brain what fuel is to an engine, says Lisa Moscone, PhD, Associate Professor of Neuroscience in Neurology and Radiology at Weill Cornell Medicine. Estrogen, particularly estradiol, the strongest form, plays a critical role in the brain's health and functionality, earning it the title of the master regulator or women's brain health. When estrogen is in the house, everything works well. She explains the 4 key roles estrogen plays. It helps protect neural structures and cells from damage and promotes the survival of neurons. It is involved in cognitive processes such as memory, learning, and executive functions. It influences mood and emotional well-being, acting on serotonin and other neurotransmitter systems. And finally, estradiol promotes the growth of new neurons and supports neuroplasticity, including the brain's ability to change and adapt. After menopause, the decline of estrogen impacts all of these brain functionalities. It's akin to an orchestra that continues to play, but to a markedly different tune, Moscone says. Without the guiding influence of estrogen, the brain's regulatory mechanisms, protective functions, and cognitive processes may be altered, potentially leading to changes in memory, mood, and overall brain health. Nearly two-thirds of women report cognitive symptoms during perimenopause and menopause, including increased stress, anxiety, brain fog, and memory loss. Carol Mijas, a New York executive, was at the top of her profession when she hit menopause. "I'm very type A, but suddenly I felt completely off my game at work. I couldn't control when hot flashes or brain fog would hit. I have a nice husband and beautiful kids, but everything felt off at home too. It left me feeling helpless and completely alone." Mood and memory issues can be frustrating. What was that word again? And scary. Am I getting early onset dementia? And can have a negative effect on relationships. Why does everything my partner does suddenly annoy me? For many women, the symptoms manifest as a vague sense of flatness or lack of spark. For others, outright anger. What happens during estrogen withdrawal? Estrogen receptors in various regions of the brain interact with neurotransmitters responsible for mood, memory, and cognition. Think of neurotransmitters as little chemical messengers that send signals between nerve cells throughout the body. As hormone levels dip during perimenopause and menopause, these signals weaken and your brain goes through estrogen withdrawal. Three of the neurotransmitters most affected by this include serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. Serotonin promotes a sense of calm, well-being, and happiness. Low serotonin levels can lead to irritability and anxiety, which, along with making you generally cranky, can disrupt sleep. There are strategies that can help you offset low serotonin. 8 weeks of an aerobic exercise has been shown to increase both serotonin and endorphins. The vitamin D you get from spending as little as 15 minutes in sunlight also boosts serotonin levels. To get the benefit of both, try instituting a walking break in the morning or at lunchtime. Certain antidepressants are designed to increase serotonin in your brain. Dopamine, another key neurotransmitter modulated by estrogen, influences the reward and pleasure centers in the brain. When dopamine is low, it not only creates depressive moods, but also impacts motivation, concentration, and energy. Yoga, meditation, and walking may all increase dopamine. Eating foods with magnesium and tyrosine, an amino acid, can boost dopamine productions. Foods to try include chicken, almonds, apples, avocados, bananas, beets, chocolate, leafy green vegetables, and green tea. Estrogen also impacts norepinephrine, the neurotransmitter that regulates the fight or flight response and can increase alertness. Imbalances can raise blood pressure and cause anxiety and panic. This is why some women experience panic attacks during menopause. Exercise and meditation can help to regulate norepinephrine. There's a reason I keep mentioning meditation. Mindfulness is one of the most powerful tools to improve overall mood and brain health. Certain techniques and behaviors, like deep breathing and intentional focus, consciously directing your attention to what is happening in the present moment to minimize distractions, decrease stress, anxiety, irritability, and rumination. Meditation can also reduce the discomfort of hot flashes and improve sleep quality, both of which affect your mental state. Diet can also play a role. Snacking on foods high in salt, sugar, and oil can feel like a temporary fix if you are feeling low, but you are bound to crash soon after and then crave more, which has a detrimental effect on both mood and weight. Melissa Mandala, MD, an expert in women's nutrition, suggests incorporating foods that are proven to have a positive effect on mood into your diet. Foods high in omega-3 and healthy fats may help to strengthen membranes in the brain and improve the flow of neurotransmitters, she says. They are also high in tryptophan and tyrosine, which are precursors to serotonin and dopamine, the happy hormones that make us feel good. Look for sesame and pumpkin seeds, flax seeds, and pistachio nuts for a mood-boosting snack. Understanding brain fog and memory. Desiree Jordan, an interior designer, didn't just have trouble remembering names. She could barely focus on what she was doing from one minute to the next. I had so much trouble remembering what people told me 5 minutes ago that I began to worry I was getting early onset Alzheimer's, she says. I couldn't focus my attention on anything long enough to get tasks done. I had a new job, which was hard enough, and this just made it worse. She found HRT helped. The fear that brain fog is a sign of dementia is one I hear nearly every day. Let me reassure you, not being able to remember a word does not mean you have early onset Alzheimer's. One more note of reassurance. Brain fog and memory lapses eventually plateau. The influence of menopausal symptoms on long-term Alzheimer's risk is still being investigated. But what we do know is that while your genetic blueprint matters, a healthy lifestyle that includes diet, exercise, and maintaining social connections can help to mitigate the effects of your DNA. Hormonal changes can make existing cognitive conditions, including ADD and ADHD, more intense during perimenopause and menopause. Terry, a retail manager in Kentucky, was diagnosed with ADD years ago. My symptoms got 10 times worse once I went into perimenopause. My brain would go to 20 zillion different places. I had to find new ways of handling it. Even things as simple as bringing my daughter to voice lessons won't happen if it isn't in my planner. Aside from writing everything down, the one thing I discovered that really helps is yoga. I had never done it before, but I found a community at one particular studio that gave me the incentive to keep going. It helps tame that scattered feeling and lets me feel more in control, even after I leave class. What about hormone therapy? Along with exercise, meditation, a diet rich in fiber and antioxidants, and getting enough sleep, hormone replacement therapy, HRT, can help to counter the effects of the loss of estrogen on mood and cognition, especially when you get a jump start and begin HRT during perimenopause. There is a critical window theory that suggests the most beneficial time to start HRT for brain health is from perimenopause to the onset of menopause or shortly thereafter, Moscone says. Four ways to deal with brain fog. While you may not be able to cure it, there are strategies to limit its effect on your life. Number one, don't try to fake it. Writing things down can be your salvation. If you have an important presentation at work, put your thoughts on index cards or in your phone, even if you used to be able to wing it. Number two, stop multitasking. While it is tempting to catch up on texts while watching TV or talking on the phone, multitasking impairs focus and memory. Number three, get organized. If you are having trouble remembering where you put your keys or your glasses, clutter isn't going to help. Create safe spots for your everyday objects, a hook by the door, a jewelry tray, a bin for shoes. Virtual clutter doesn't help either. Be sure to file emails into folders and flag those you absolutely must remember. And number four, use imagery and tricks to remember names. Creating a mental image of a name or phrase can help with recall. For example, if someone tells you their name is Petra, try to picture a Petri dish in the moment. You've been listening to This Is Your Brain on Menopause from Women's Health Magazine. The Baldwins, Finding Strength in Our Family. Alec and Hilaria Baldwin open up about their life with seven kids and supporting each other through the Rust tragedy. By Eric Anderson and Nigel Smith. Photographs by Jillian Lamb. This is a People Magazine exclusive. Alec and Hilaria Baldwin's sunny duplex apartment in New York City has all the hallmarks of parents with young children. Framed photos of cherubic faces, stacks of books like Dinosaurs Love Underpants, a harried dad quickly eating some of his kids' leftover pasta at the dining room table, and commotion. Lots of commotion. The Baldwin's apartment, which on a recent frigid January day doubled as the set for a People photo shoot, is filled with the sounds of seven children running and playing as their mom gently but firmly tries to corral them for a family photo. "Come, come," Hilaria calls out as several pairs of tiny feet stomp around from various directions. She tries again. "Everybody into the living room, please." If Hilaria is stressed, she doesn't show it. As she explains later of her parenting philosophy, "I'm going to go with the flow. Trying to fight seven little people, you're greatly outnumbered." On the family's new TLC reality series, The Baldwins, premiering February 23rd. Lightheartedly chaotic moments like these are interwoven with scenes about Alec's legal drama over the accidental shooting on the set of his movie Rust. The show gives viewers a glimpse of Emmy-winning 30 Rock star Alec, 66, and author, yoga pro, and wellness expert Hilaria, 41, as they navigate a then uncertain future and the joyful but hectic day-to-day with their kids. Getting haircuts, tending to their pets. They now have 4 dogs and 4 cats. And ferrying between the city and their Long Island home in 2 SUVs. This is our life, says Alec, sitting beside Hilaria in their kitchen a few minutes after the photo shoot wraps. Their children have always remained their focus and a source of happiness. I always joke with her and say, "You know where I should be right now, don't you? We should be on Geffen's yacht, drinking a cappuccino and reading a book and having dinner with Spielberg or whatever," he says. Hilaria interjects, "Instead, we're changing diapers," which is just the way they like it. "This is my reality," Alex says, reflecting on their family dynamic. "I wouldn't change anything." Putting their lives on camera is a bold move for a couple who have often been targeted by tabloid press and social media commenters since they began dating after meeting by chance at a New York City restaurant 14 years ago. Alec and Hilaria, who wed in 2012, have been picked apart for their age difference, their decision to have a large family, and everything in between. By now, accustomed to facing criticism, the parents of Carmen, 11, Raphael, 9, Leonardo, 8, Romeo, 6, Eduardo and Marilou, 4, and Hilaria, 2, aim to reclaim their narrative and upend unfair misconceptions. She's a gold digger, he's a grump. Telling your story is one thing, and showing your story is something else, says Hilaria. It felt authentic, it felt human, it felt very empowering. On the show, they get candid about hot topics, including whether they had a prenup. "I said I would," Hilaria recounts, and then you're like, "Okay, we don't have to." For Alec, whose oldest daughter, Ireland, 29, with ex-wife Kim Basinger, 71, made him a proud grandfather in 2023, filming with his loved ones also felt like a bonus. It was work, but it didn't feel like work. "We did the show because it's in place of doing a movie or a play. Now I think to myself, am I going to be away from my kids 5 nights out of the week until 11 o'clock at night?" says Alec, who shows a lighter side in the series when he's goofing off with the kids or icing a birthday cake with them. "For me, work-related things really aren't that critical anymore. I thought, I get to spend time with my family." Still, filming came at a particularly tough time. Cameras rolled on the 8-episode docuseries last year in the weeks before Alec was tried in New York for involuntary manslaughter following the deadly accidental shooting on the set of the Western movie Rust in 2021. Alec, who faced up to 18 months in prison, was holding a prop gun when it discharged, killing cinematographer Helena Hutchins and injuring writer-director Joel Souza, who recovered from his injuries. Though Alec insisted he did not pull the trigger and could not have known the gun contained live ammunition instead of dummy rounds, he was indicted by a grand jury and stood trial in July. But on day 3 of the proceedings, the judge dismissed the case with prejudice after Alec's lawyers argued that the prosecutors withheld evidence. Alec still faces civil suits from Hutchinson's relatives, and he has sued the prosecutors and investigators for alleged malicious prosecution. Having cameras present at such a frightening time didn't feel like an intrusion, says Hilaria. It was an opportunity for us to actually speak. It was a really safe space, she says. And I think it was also very cathartic, almost like a diary, during a very unsure time of our life. That felt both terrifying and like it could get us through day by day. The couple leaned on each other, as seen in tender moments on the show. I don't know where I would be if I didn't have her, Alex says of Hilaria. I don't know what would have happened to me. He credits her for sticking by his side, not just at the trial, but for all the years prior when they were getting flack. Most people in her position would have left. They would have thought, what do I need this for? I'm entitled to live my life and have peace and freedom and joy. And she could have turned around and gone. She didn't. Alec and Hilaria tried to shield their children from the brunt of the Rust case media coverage. But their older children were aware, so the Baldwins had honest and simple conversations about what was unfolding. There's no way to package something that's awful, says Hilaria. And I think the hardest part about it is if you say everything's going to be fine, which is what every parent wants to say to their kids, you can't because you don't want to be a liar later. The Baldwins are keenly aware that others have suffered too, including Hutchinson's widower, Matthew, and their only child. As Hilaria says on the show, a son lost his mom. We are going to feel and carry that pain forever. So how do they carry it? You can't, but you do, says Hilaria. There is no recipe. With the trial behind them, the Baldwins are back to a more normal routine and closer than ever. We're sticking together. We're trying to live life and show joy. I think that that's the best thing that you can do, says Hilaria, who was recently feted by her family as she turned 41. They hung cards for me. We had many balloons. Once you're a mom, your birthday's about them. Alec is still coming to terms with what he went through. I had to stuff feelings down because I had 7 kids. I couldn't really go in the other room and cry or whatever, he says. And now the emotion is really kind of washing up on me. He'd like to continue making movies, but he says work remains a distant second to his life as a family man. And chauffeur. He's the one who shuttles the kids to school each day. Hilaria has 2 family-related books in the works. Glowing Up, a skincare guide she wrote with daughter Carmen, out March 25th, and Manual Not Included, a collection of personal stories about relationships, parenthood, and more, out May 6th. The Baldwins are thankful for what they have and secure in knowing they can get through anything together. We're leaning into gratitude every single day. I didn't sleep a lot last night, but I wake up and my kids are doing funny things and there's a cat trying to mess up your computer right now, Hilaria says, pointing to a People reporter's laptop. It's funny. The simple beauties of life can get you through hard moments. The more that I lean into gratitude, the better that we feel. What's next in Rust legal battles? Though Alec Baldwin's involuntary manslaughter case is over, there are still legal fights ahead. Alec is now suing the Rust prosecutors and investigators, alleging malicious abuse of process, among other claims, after the judge dismissed the case with prejudice. Gloria Allred, a lawyer representing the parents and sister of Helena Hutchins, the cinematographer who died on the set of Rust, says their civil case against Alec and other producers and crew is moving forward. We are still litigating. The Rust filmmakers previously reached an agreement in a different lawsuit with Hutchinson's widower, Matthew. Joyful moments. As cameras rolled on the Baldwins last year, we just decided to be messy and open, says Hilaria. Unguarded scenes show the family reveling in each other's company before Alex's trial in New Mexico. If he had been convicted, was I going to come back and film the show by myself after that? Says Hilaria. We didn't know. You've been listening to The Baldwins, Finding Strength in Our Family, a People Magazine exclusive. Thanks for joining us today for the Women's Hour. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the stories in our program today, and you'll make plans to join us again next week for another interesting and entertaining collection of articles from women's magazines. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. Have a great day, and be sure you stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.